Welcome to Parents' Perspective.
Where's Mom?
6-year-old Angie asked her 9-year-old brother Brad.
I don't know. Probably in her room, like always,
he replied, busily setting up his collection of race cars on the floor.
Well, I need her to come out, Angie announced. She said she'd take me to get new shoes today.
She headed up to her mom's room.
Hi, honey,
said a soft voice in response to her knock.
You can come in.
Angie peered into the darkness and found her mom sitting up in her bed, glassy-eyed, hands clenched around her knees.
Why is it so dark in here?
Angie asked. No answer.
It's time to go get my new shoes.
No answer.
Want me to help you get up?
Angie came over to the bedside and put her hand over her mom's. Her mom stifled a sob, choking her throat. Her whole body felt cold and numb.
Come on, Mom,
Angie coaxed.
You promised.
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about maternal depression? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has had her own firsthand experience with issues she has written about. Tracy Thompson is an award-winning journalist for The Washington Post and a freelance writer who has written for a number of well-known magazines. Her first book, The Beast, was an acclaimed memoir of her personal battle with depression. Her most recent book, The Ghost in the House, Motherhood, Raising Children, and Struggling with Depression, is an essential tool for families to monitor mental and emotional well-being, not just in the mom's self-interest, but also for the welfare of the entire family. Tracy has 2 children and has struggled with depression throughout her life. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Tracy.
Thanks for having me.
What's the difference between maternal depression and what most people recognize as postpartum depression?
Well, I think most people confuse the terms. When I said I was writing a book about maternal depression, most people thought that I meant postpartum depression. But postpartum depression is just a subset of maternal depression. It's specific to the biological act of childbearing, and it's probably more hormonally induced than other types of depression, which we're now learning there are different types of depression. And it's sort of an arbitrary definition also. The postpartum period ends at 1 year. Why? Because some pediatrician said that. I don't know. And so if you're having depression after that 1 year, it's no longer postpartum depression. But what I wanted to write about was the problem of depression as it interferes with the job of being a mother. And I think that it's a really relevant topic for these days because the stress of being a mom in the 21st century is in some ways greater than it's ever been before because the expectations placed on women are higher than they've ever been before. Mothers don't have to worry about polio anymore, and they don't have to worry about dying in childbirth, but they do have enormous expectations placed on them about what a good mother ought to be. And it has to do with getting their kids scheduled and maintaining their own careers and making sure that the family keeps operating. You know, there's just a host of things that go with the administrative functioning of a family that by default often fall to the mother, even if she's working a full-time job. So I think we live in a high-stress age, and depression is basically a pathological reaction to stress.
Is there such a thing as paternal depression, or is that only when they get the bills?
You know, I'm sure there is. I look at my husband, and I know some days. I think that, yes, there probably is. I didn't write about it because I'm a mother, and I know only about mothers. And also because women in our society are the primary caregivers for kids most of the time. It's a very neglected topic. That's not to say it doesn't exist. I'm sure it does. It's just that I can't speak to it.
The male researchers are just too depressed to study about it.
And I think there's less of it because, you know, for what I just said, I mean, mothers are the primary caregivers. Mm-hmm.
What's the biggest myth about maternal depression that you have found in your research?
Well, I think people are becoming a whole lot more educated about depression. But as always, the public perceptions are lagging behind the science. But the first myth, I guess, would be that it was limited to postpartum depression. I think that's probably the biggest myth.
So it's a year. Why don't you buck up and get yourself together?
Right. As if you couldn't possibly get depressed after that first year. But you talk to any mother with three kids, two of whom are still in diapers, and the other one's in elementary school, and yeah, she could certainly suffer from depression. And it wouldn't be called postpartum depression, but I would call it maternal depression. My definition of maternal depression, by the way, is depression that is created by or exacerbated by the stress that is common to being a mother these days. Hmm. It's not a scientific definition. It's more of a cultural definition.
How did you figure out that maternal depression was the problem with which you were dealing?
Well, I had the lesson hammered in. I am a person who's suffered with depression for most of my life, off and on. And I was a classic candidate for postpartum depression with my first child. And sure enough, I suffered from it. I went off my meds during my pregnancy, which we now know is not a good idea for people like me with a long history of depression. When you do the risk-benefit analysis, the risk of being depressed or suffering from anxiety during your pregnancy is much greater than the risk of taking antidepressants. So that's something a lot of people don't know. In any event, I went off my meds during pregnancy, and then I had my daughter and suffered this just amazing free fall. Just had a hellish first year with her. And during that first year, it really came home to me with a lot of force that in the past, if I suffered from depression, I could stay home from work for a few days, or I could sometimes use work as an escape. I did that a lot. But that my job had now changed, and my job was now me. And kids don't settle for just a little piece of you. They want all of you. In fact, they want all of you 24/7. And that I could no longer separate my illness from my job the way I used to. And that was the point at which I started thinking about how I was going to have to learn a whole new set of coping skills besides the ones I had developed and used pretty successfully before I had kids. And that it was just a whole new ball game when it came to trying to deal with my illness and be a decent mom to my kids.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on maternal depression.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, The Popular Voter's Guide by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Tracy Thompson, author of The Ghost in the House, about maternal depression. What kind of coping skills did you have to put in place?
Well, it takes an understanding spouse. I do not know how a single mother who suffers from depression would deal with this. You would need an extensive support network. It's like good parenting methods. There's no textbook. This is what you have to do. Everybody has to develop their own. The coping skills that have come in the handiest for me have to do with recognizing when I'm headed for a relapse, recognizing, for instance, that when I get irritable when the phone rings, that's a bad sign. That means I'm headed down the slope, you know, when the ringing of the phone makes me snap. And learning how to build in time for myself, learning to give myself time for exercise, which so many parents, mothers in particular, neglect once they have kids, because it's just so easy to be overwhelmed with the day-to-day. But if you're dealing with depression, it is an absolute must. You just can't skip it. There are times when I just treat it like the flu, If I'm really feeling bad, I just say I have to go to bed for a day or so. Recognizing that you can overdo that. But there are also times when if your body is really depleted and stressed out, sleep is a great restorative. And so Sometimes people with depression need extra sleep. And I've talked to women who say that's just a non-negotiable item in their schedule, you know. And that might mean making a deal with your husband. If the kids get sick in the night, he's going to have to be the one to get up and deal with them.
So how do you go to bed for a day if your husband has to go to work and you've got a kid in a crib who needs to be changed and fed and taken care of?
Well, you have to hire help. Yeah, or if you're fortunate enough to have a friend or neighbor that will help you, that's great. We hired help when we didn't have money to hire help because it was just simply more expensive to have me continue to get sick. And that was something I did differently with my second child. When my second daughter was born, I stayed on my meds throughout my pregnancy. I changed my medication to one that was low risk. I did not stress out over breastfeeding because with my first child, I had been largely unable to breastfeed due to the fact that I was so stressed out. With my second child, I was able to breastfeed her a little longer, but it ended prematurely because I was sleeping through the night. And as you know, if you really want to be a breastfeeder, you got to get up at all hours and just do it. And I knew that my sleep was more important than my breast milk because my sanity was more important. And we also hired a doula for like the first month.
You want to explain what a doula is in case
people don't know? Basically a baby expert, a baby nurse. She wasn't live-in, but she came every day for about 6 or 7 hours a day so that I could, if I needed it, go upstairs and sleep at any time. And my baby loved her. She was a very easy newborn, so easy to take care of. And I could leave her with the doula and know that she was just fine. And I recovered from my second childbirth, 4 times as fast as I did from the first time around because I had to learn from my mistakes.
As we understand it, we've interviewed a doula before on our show, and we understand it, a doula is a little different from a baby nurse in that the doula is there to be a helper to the mommy. She may take care of the baby or show you how to do things with the baby.
That's right.
She's really there for the mom, which I think is a wonderful thing to know about.
Yeah.
And that seems like a brilliant solution.
It was a real lifesaver.
Tracy, is this kind of depression genetically predisposed in some women? Does it tend to run in families?
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely. Depression has a clear genetic component. But that's not to say that if you come from a family that has a lot of depression in the family tree that you're doomed to suffer or that your children are doomed to suffer, because the way it works is there is an interaction between genetics and environment. Depression has to do with gene expression as much as genetic inheritance. The best analogy really is the one Myrna Weissman at Columbia University uses. She's a pioneer researcher in the epidemiology of depression. She likened it to, for instance, if you have a genetic predisposition to heart disease, you can go through life, and if you're a vegetarian, you probably will not suffer from heart disease, or if you do, you probably won't have any problems until much later in life. But if you have that genetic predisposition and you eat at McDonald's 3 times a week, you're probably going to get sick, and you're probably going to get sick pretty young. So that's the way the genes for depression work. And the environmental influence always has to do with some kind of stress. Now, stress is a broad term because the stress can be even prenatal. That's the fascinating part about this stuff. Prenatal stress can be depression in the mother. When the mother is depressed, your stress hormones go up. That means you have a lot of cortisol running around in your body. Cortisol is a hormone that crosses the placental barrier. And if it crosses the placental barrier at a certain window during pregnancy, it can affect the development of the brain of the fetus. And that, in turn, affects the ways babies respond to stress. The babies that are born to mothers who are depressed during pregnancy tend to show what one researcher has called a profile of dysregulation. They're fussy. They have erratic sleeping patterns. They have high cortisol levels themselves that persist well for a year into the first year of life. And they're just kind of cranky and inconsolable.
Now, does that make a vicious cycle? Then the mother gets depressed because the baby's so fussy.
Oh, it can easily turn into that, yes. If you have a mother who's already depressed and that she has a very irritable, fussy, hard-to-soothe baby, oh, you bet. That's like the worst vicious cycle there can be. And I've heard some stories about that. But that's just one form of stress. And even if that should happen, it's not, you know, that doesn't send you on the path to doom. It's something you can work with. But in any event, the stresses can be, you know, some personal loss or physical trauma. I've heard of people who suffered from depression after being in car accidents or something like that. So anyway, what you have is the genetics for depression interacting with some outside influence that triggers that genetic vulnerability. And the interesting thing is that what you can do is you can learn techniques of coping, and this is where things like cognitive behavioral therapy come in, that can increase your resilience and help you turn around the habits of thinking that get started by depression and help you learn to kind of haul yourself out of that hole when you get stuck in it. So it's a very complicated mix of environment, genetics, and learned behavior.
Can you tell a little bit about what cognitive behavioral therapy is?
What a cognitive behavioral therapist will do is to help you identify behaviors you want to change, help you identify what triggers those behaviors, and then come up with different ways of coping, of thinking through your own reactions.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on maternal depression.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Tracy Thompson, author of The Ghost in the House, about maternal depression.
What are the effects of this kind of depression on children in the family when the mother has this kind of depression?
The way the behaviors kind of played out in the moms that I surveyed, there were three basic overall patterns of behavior. One was withdrawal. And moms who are depressed want to withdraw from their kids, and they tend to either actually withdraw, go into their bedrooms and hide out, or they go through the motions. They're just mechanical, doing what has to be done, but they're not emotionally engaged with their kids. Or another behavior pattern was just hyper-irritability. When you're stressed out, when you're feeling the stress of depression, every little thing can just snap your nerves. And that's sort of what I was talking about before, like when I start to get snappy when the phone rings, that's a danger sign for me. And then the third pattern was a real difficulty in setting boundaries and being consistent about setting boundaries. And that has to do with this kind of cycling between the withdrawal and the hyper-irritability. And I think it's because the basic underlying behavior that moms do is they want to withdraw, but you can't because the kids are there and they got to have you, and you hear something crashing in the other room and you have to go investigate. And so that drags you out of your withdrawal, and then you're dealing with other people when you don't want to be, which makes you hyper irritable, and then you overdo it, and then you lurch back into withdrawal. And the kids don't understand what to expect. The kids suffer from the fact that they never know from one day to the next what rules mommy is going to impose and what's going to drive her crazy, what they can get away with. And so the effect on kids, it varies. Kids can either become overly solicitous. They can become like little grown-ups taking mm-hmm. care of the parents. And that's definitely something you need to watch out for. Another effect of it is that kids learn patterns of thinking from their parents. And I had a real, it was striking to me how many moms in the survey described their own children as perfectionists. Just real, you know, if I can't do it perfectly, I'm a failure. You know, it was a version of this kind of all or nothing thinking, which is typical of depression itself. And so it's not surprising when you think about it. But these were kids, some of whom were extremely smart and talented, but they didn't appreciate their own gifts. They didn't understand that there was one woman who talked about her daughter who had just gotten her PhD, and she didn't get the first job she went for, and her reaction was, well, I guess I can always go back to waiting tables. And so these were kids who, it really was a dramatic illustration of how this all-or-nothing kind of thinking that depression inculcates in you when you've suffered from it a long time, it's a distorted pattern of thinking. But when your kids pick it up, that can be what happens.
What would you say is the most important advice you would offer to moms who might be facing their own maternal depression?
Recognize it. Stop being a stoic. Go get some treatment. First, go get a physical exam to make sure you're not suffering from thyroid issues or Lyme disease or other things that can mimic depression. And when you've ruled that out, go see a therapist and get yourself on medication if you need to be. One mother wrote to me about what her advice would be. Is she says, at the maternity hospital, they ought to issue you T-shirts when you leave that say, whatever works.
I want to ask you a quickie question. Terrific. You mentioned medication a few times as we've talked. Mm-hmm. And I know it's not, take some medication, your headache will go away.
No, not by any means. I'm on medication, and I still suffer relapses from time to time. And medication is not necessary for everybody. I don't push it as a panacea. It's not a panacea. And there is, in fact, a big problem with doctors who are not psychiatrists, general practitioners, just ripping off a prescription for 20 milligrams of Zoloft, and that's the end of the story. You need to be careful about your medication. You need to read up on the side effects. You need to make sure that you need it. But on the other hand, medication can be an essential tool to getting better. It is, though, just one tool out of many.
So it should be a psychiatrist
yes.
that you see and a psychiatrist who decides to recommend or not recommend
right.
medication.
Right.
What resources would you recommend to our listeners who want to pursue some of these issues further?
There's a list of resources in my book, which is entitled The Ghost in the House, Motherhood, Raising Children, and Struggling with Depression. There's also any number of sites on the web that are excellent resources. The National Institute of Mental Health would be the first stop. Their website is www.nimh.nih.gov. The National Alliance for the Mentally Ill has an extremely good website. There is also a website called Postpartum Depression Support and Education that you can find on the web. If you were interested in cognitive therapy, the BeckInstitute.org, also the American Psychological Association website, and the National Mental Health Association. And I also want to put a plug in here for saying that, and there was a part of my book that deals with how depression can make you a better mother. And it sounds really counterintuitive after this gloomy picture I've painted. I like to say that depression doesn't make you a good mother, but engaging with depression and surviving it makes you a better mother. And that is because it teaches empathy. It teaches your kids empathy. When your kids see you struggling with a really serious illness and getting out of bed every day and going on, they learn something about courage. And they also learn something about self-care and taking care of yourself and what self-respect really means. Not just having a big ego, but simply taking care of your body and taking care of yourself. And these are all issues that any parent would do well to model for their kids. But I think mothers who are dealing with depression really struggle with their depression. And if they master it and overcome it, they're going to be raising kids that have a real appreciation for what kind of struggles life can offer, and that won't be knocked flat by the first adversity that they encounter, too, because they will have seen a parent dealing with adversity, and that is a huge, huge life lesson.
Tracy, as we understand it, there's a way that our listeners can get in touch with you directly?
Yes, they can contact me through my blog, which is called Maternally Challenged.
Well, you have given us resources and life lessons, and Tracy Thompson, we are just delighted that you could be with us today.
Well, thanks. I'm glad I was here.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Tracy Thompson's book, The Ghost in the House, Motherhood, Raising Children, and Struggling with Depression. Please call us at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 311. Again, it's 1-800-791-8573. And if you can, tell us what station you're listening to. Since we air all over the world, it's fun to know where you're tuning in. Our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, is available in all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents Perspective, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. At the site, you can even hear a show at any time. Just scroll down to the topic or guest of your choice and click onto the words Listen to Podcast below. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.